Hello and welcome to Flat Baroque, produced here at CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Today we're enjoying another one of Gaetano Donizetti's operas dealing with the Tudor period in English history, including our last program's presentation of Anna Bolena, as well as Roberto Devereux and Il Castello di Kenilworth. Today's presentation of Maria Stuarda, or Mary Stuart, is a two-act tragic opera composed by Donizetti to an Italian libretto by Giuseppe Bardari. It first premiered at La Scala in Milan in 1835. The 1994 recording of Maria Stuarda we will be listening to together today was performed by the Chorale de Teatro and Orchestra del Teatro Comunale di Bologna, conducted by Richard Bonning. This performance features the voice talents of soprano great Dame Joan Sutherland as the title character, Maria Stuarda. We'll also listen to Luciano Pavarotti, Huguette Durango, Margareta Elkins, James Morris, and Richard Sawyer. The opera has a small cast of characters, including Maria Stuarda, the Queen of Scotland, Elisabetta, the Queen of England, Anna Kennedy, Maria's companion and lady-in-waiting, Roberto, the Earl of Leicester, Lord Guglielmo Cecil, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Giorgio Talbot, the Earl of Shrewsbury, and a single herald. Maria Stuarda is set in the late 16th century at the Palace of Westminster in London and Fotheringay Castle in Northamptonshire, England, and we find Mary Stuart, Queen of Scots, forced to flee her kingdom after a rebellion of Scottish rebels. Mary, a Catholic, had been betrothed to the Dauphin of France and raised as a child in the French court. At 18, she returned to Scotland following the sudden death of her husband, Francis II, having reigned as Queen of France for little more than a year. Unable to command control over her Protestant nobility and beset by a number of insurrections, plots, and murders, she had sought asylum in England from her cousin, Queen Elizabeth. But her presence in Protestant England does not, of course, work for the Protestant Queen, Elizabeth, and her advisors. And as a descendant of the Tudor line, the English Catholics see Mary Stuart as the rightful heir to Henry VIII's crown, Elizabeth having previously been declared illegitimate following the execution of her mother, Anne Boleyn. Maria Stuarda is set in the late 16th century at the Palace of Westminster in London and Fotheringay Castle in Northamptonshire, England. In the first act, we find ourselves at the Palace of Whitehall in London. The court is celebrating there because the Duke of Anjou, brother of the King of France, has sought Queen Elizabeth's hand in marriage and the alliance of the two kingdoms. Queen Elizabeth is still a bit undecided as to whether she'll accept this proposal from the Duke of Anjou, or any proposal for that matter, because she's still very much in love with Robert Dudley, the Earl of Leicester. But she is sensing that his love for her is waning. Talbot, the Earl of Shrewsbury, and also Mary Stuart's custodian over the last several years, has taken the opportunity here to petition the Queen for her cousin's release. Cecil, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, argues that Mary presents a constant threat to the stability of England while she still remains alive. Elizabeth refuses to be drawn in on the subject of her cousin, but privately fears that the Queen of Scots has stolen the love of Leicester from her. Because, as it turns out, Leicester had been a suitor for Mary's hand in the past and was dazzled by the young queen's beauty when he first met her long ago in France. Leicester arrives then, and Elizabeth gives him a ring to convey to the French ambassador the acceptance of Anjou's proposal. His indifferent response fuels her suspicions, and she leaves, attended by the court. Alone with Leicester, Talbot secretly hands him a letter with a miniature sent by Mary Stuart. Enmeshed in the plots of the English Catholics against Elizabeth, Mary's life now hangs in the balance. Enraptured by the portrait, Leicester vows to give his aid to and support to Talbot's plans for Mary's liberation. And as Talbot leaves, Elizabeth returns alone. Suspicious of Talbot, she demands to see the letter in Leicester's hands. In the letter Mary has written, she begs Elizabeth for an audience, and in spite of herself, Elizabeth begins to cry. Seizing his advantage, Leicester presses the queen to agree to ride out near Mary's prison on a hunt and under this pretext engineer a meeting between the two queens. Although a bit mistrustful, Elizabeth agrees to her beloved's request. Unexpectedly allowed by Talbot to walk freely in the park outside her prison of Fotheringay Castle, Mary rejoices, running far ahead of her lady-in-waiting, Anna Kennedy. Her thoughts turn to times of happiness and liberty in France, and the horns of the royal hunt are suddenly heard in the distance. The approaching huntsmen cry out Elizabeth's name, and Mary is struck with fear at the prospect of finally setting eyes on her cousin and competitor. Leicester has ridden ahead of the hunt to prepare Mary for the meeting. He urges her to humble herself before Elizabeth and move the queen to pity. Pledging his love and loyalty, he promises Mary that she may yet be free. He leaves and hastens to greet Elizabeth as she arrives with the hunting party, and she is agitated and suspicious, and Leicester's attitude towards Mary's cause rouses still more jealousy. Talbot leads Mary forward, and the two queens stare into each other's eyes for the very first time. Mary masters her pride and shows deference before Elizabeth, but her cousin remains aloof and insulting. She accuses Mary of licentiousness, murder, and treason. The tender words with which Leicester tries to calm Mary serve only to increase Elizabeth's anger. Insulted beyond endurance, Mary turns on Elizabeth. She denounces her as the illegitimate offspring of a prostitute, one whose foot sullies and dishonors the throne of England. Elizabeth orders the guards to seize Mary and drag her back to prison. And here we are now at Act 1, Maria Stuarda.
Sospetti in voi. Thank you. Yeah. essere guidata al tuo cospetto dal saggio tempo.
A quel per te discendo sacrificio, lo vedi, disposto ai cacciatori, a condurre viali, e troppo ingombro di popolo il sentier.
Che a dar conforto alla dolente vita di una sorella io ti guidai la mano che di squallor la cinse al contento primiero.